want to tonight continue in our study of the book of Revelation. And I would ask if you could turn to Revelation chapter 6. What I'd really like to do is read right now Revelation 6 through 19. But that would probably take most of our time. But there is something to be said for having the material, the text, fresh in your mind when you talk about an overview. And I'm not going to read chapter 6 through 19, but I'm going to read chapter 6. And chapter 6 is a revelation of the first six seal judgments. So let me just read it. Then I saw when the Lamb broke one of the seven seals. Now maybe I should just stop and point out that again, remember what we just saw last week was the Lamb as slain, who was standing there in the midst of the throne, and he took the scroll from the Father's hand as he sat on the throne. And now there is Jesus who just took this scroll. The Lamb took the scroll and he opens the first seal. Then I saw when the Lamb broke one of the seven seals, and I heard one of the four living creatures saying with a voice of thunder. By the way, one of the four living creatures, again, just to remind you, those one of the four that are around the throne that are saying, holy, 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 the same ones that appeared in Isaiah 6, the same ones that we see in Revelation chapter 4, these are the ones that he speaks of when he says the living creatures. It says, one of the four living creatures saying as with a voice of thunder, come. I looked, and behold, a white horse, and he who sat on it had a bow, and a crown was given to him, and he went out conquering and to conquer. When he broke the second seal, I heard the second living creature saying, come. And another, a red horse, went out, and to him who sat on it, it was granted to take peace from the earth, and that men would slay one another. And a great sword was given to him. When he broke the third seal, I heard the third living creature saying, come. I looked, and behold, a black horse, and he who sat on it had a pair of scales in his hand. And I heard something like a voice in the center of the four living creatures saying, a quart of wheat for a denarius, and three quarts of barley for a denarius, and do not damage the oil and the wine. When the Lamb broke the fourth seal, I heard the voice of the fourth living creature saying, come. I looked, and behold, an ashen horse, and he who sat on it had the name Death, and Hades was following with him. Authority was given to him over a fourth of the earth to kill with the sword and with the famine and with pestilence and by the wild beasts of the earth. When the Lamb broke the fifth seal, I saw underneath the altar the souls of those who had been slain because of the word of God and because of the testimony which they had maintained. And they cried out with a loud voice, saying, how long, O Lord, holy and true, will you refrain from judging and avenging our blood on those who dwell on the earth? And there was given to each of them a white robe, and they were told that they should rest for a little while longer, until the number of their fellow servants and their brethren who were to be killed, even as they had been, would be completed also. I looked when he broke the sixth seal, and there was a great earthquake, and the sun became black as sackcloth made of hair, and the whole moon became like blood. And the stars of the sky fell to the earth as a fig tree casts its unripe figs when shaken by a great wind. The sky was split apart like a scroll when it is rolled up, and every mountain and island were moved out of their places. Then the king of the earth and the great men and the commanders and the rich and the strong and every slave and free man hid themselves in the caves and among the rocks of the mountains. And they said to the mountains and to the rocks, fall on us and hide us from the presence of him who sits on the throne and from the wrath of the Lamb, for the great day of their wrath has come, and who is able to stand? Now this chapter in many ways is very typical of what you have from chapter 6 through chapter 19. Now, I will say, truly, I think hands down, this is the most difficult passage of Scripture in the Bible, Revelation 6 through 19. And when you read through it, it is full of symbols, it is full of strange-sounding, ominous-sounding things that are very difficult to know how to take them. There are very few scriptures that are this difficult, and I would say none, but Zechariah comes to mind, and parts of Ezekiel. But I do think that this section is the most difficult. Now, the temptation is to jump right in and start going in chapter 6 and saying, okay, this is this and this is that. But I want to step back, because I think this will help you a great deal in understanding this section. I want to step back and look at it as a whole. And we'll come back to what I'm going to talk about tonight. We'll come back as we go through 6 through 19. But it will help you, I think, get the big picture. And the big picture is very important. What I did this week, I simply went through the text and tried to put the structure and some of the structure together, not trying to interpret every little detail. We're not going to do that. But helping us to put everything together in a logical way and understanding exactly the big picture. So let me go over here. Now, can everybody see this? Are you guys okay here, Mark? Can you see? If you can, you can always come over to this side or move up or whatever you need to do. But we're going to look at Revelation 6 through 19, and the whole section, as I would argue, is about the coming of the king. That whole section from 6:19, if you could put a heading to it, it is the coming of the king. It is the coming of the lamb. It's his return. And that is the theme of the book. The book's theme is the return of Christ. But it would be helpful, again, to review what we talked about a couple of weeks ago, the structure of the book as a whole and where we are in it. It helps to review that. And I would, again, going back to Revelation 1:19, chapter 1 are the things that John saw. We should say the first thing that he saw, namely the vision of Christ standing, getting ready to judge, as it were, in chapter 1. Chapter 2 and 3, the things which are. In other words, the seven churches, the seven letters or seven messages to the churches. And then the things which shall be, or the things that shall be hereafter. And we know that that starts with chapter 4, verse 1, because it says, the angel called him to heaven and said, I will show you things that must be hereafter. So everything from chapter 4 on happens, if we can put it this way, after, at the very least, after the time when John wrote the letter, which, again, we looked at was around 94 AD. So everything from chapter 4 on is future to John, and I would argue future to us still, but these are prophetic visions, the whole section, regarding the return of Christ. Now let me briefly, simply outline that last section. From chapter 4 to chapter 22, I would break it down into three basic sections. The first one, chapter 4 and 5, is the whole scene in heaven where the Lamb, or the you have the throne, the setting of the throne room, and God is sitting there on his throne. And in chapter 5, he has a scroll in his hand, and Jesus takes the scroll, or the Lamb takes the scroll. That is chapter 4 and 5. And then from chapter 6 through 19, you have the Lamb returns. And that is really what the whole section is about. It's about the coming of the Lamb. He comes at the very end. The whole section is about his coming. And then chapter 20 through 22, we could say the Lamb reigns. That's when he comes to the earth. He comes to the earth in chapter 19. In chapter 20, we have the millennium, the great white throne judgment. In chapter 21 and 22, we have the eternal state. The Lamb reigns. Now, understand, then, this is where the section that we're talking about is in the middle here, chapter 6 through 19. When we look at this from a broad perspective or from an overview, I want to begin by, I think I have five things here. Five things that I think if we're going to understand something of the nature of the material, we have to comprehend to begin with. And the first is the parameters. We'll look at each one of these individually, but the parameters of the events. In other words, what marks the beginning of the section and what marks the end of the section? Then, secondly, the timing of these events, and I mean in a broad way, the whole section. When does this section take place? The structure of the events, and what I mean by that is how the events in time work out, and I'll say more about that. The structure of the text, and tonight what I want to do, actually most of the time, probably tonight if I get through this far, is going to be spent in putting those two together, the structure of the events with the structure of the text. And that will help us, I think, greatly in understanding the details. And then lastly, and we probably won't get to this tonight, but the nature of the events. And I want to talk a little bit about the symbolism and how do we deal with the symbolism and some of the other things that are there. All of these things are fundamental to how we understand the details. So let me take one at a time. First of all, let me talk about the parameters of this section. The starting point for this section is obviously what we read this morning, or this just a few minutes ago. The Lamb removes the first seal of the scroll. He's just taken the scroll. I saw when the Lamb opened one of the seals. That's the beginning. The Lamb opens one of the seals on the scroll. The ending point is the Lamb returns, and Revelation 19:11 through 21, I saw heaven open, and behold, a white horse, and he that sat upon him was called Faithful and True in righteousness, and in righteousness he doth judge and make war. And we find him coming to the earth, making war on the kings that have gathered against him, and destroying the beast and the false prophet. That's the ending point of this section. Okay? So, again, not to be too simplistic, but in a graphic form, in Revelation 6 through 9, I think you can refer to the whole thing really as the opening of those seven seals and the Lamb returning. By the way, this is one of the reasons people who talk about a pre-tribulation rapture being a second coming, having two comings of Christ, the reason my response to that is there is one coming of Christ, it lasts for 7 years. It is a seven-year coming. And the first part of it, at the beginning of it, the church is raptured. At the end of it, he comes to the earth. But the whole period, I understand to be his coming. That's part of the reason, by the way, I say that is because you'll notice, as I've said this before, but in Scripture, the Scriptures speak of the return of Christ as being imminent, and yet at the same time, we are called to look for signs. Now, it's imminent from the standpoint of the rapture, but the Jews are told in Matthew 24 to look for signs because there are signs, i.e. the 7 years of tribulation, that happen before his coming, before he comes to the earth. That's part of the reason that I hold to a pre-tribulation rapture. You have imminence and signs both taught in Scripture side by side. When you understand the coming is 7 years, I think that helps you understand that. Now let me, secondly, briefly speak of the timing of events, which I've talked about this before, but I want to emphasize. This is very important because this is one of the most fundamental starting points in the debate over what the book of Revelation means. I would argue that everything in Revelation 6 through 19, everything is future to us. None of it has happened. That's the big debate with preterism. But I have given you these reasons before. I think the reasons that I give for that are simply, first of all, a lack of consensus. In other words, when we go through these prophecies in chapters 6 through 19, there has never been, there still isn't, a consensus as to when any of them would have happened. There are lots of theories. There are many, try to put this with this and this with that. But there has never been agreement, there has never been a consensus on when any of them have been fulfilled. And that's a good sign that they haven't been fulfilled. Because when we see fulfilled prophecy, generally speaking, we're in agreement. If you go back to Daniel and look at these prophecies and say, yeah, well, we know this was fulfilled in such and such AD. This was fulfilled in such and such BC. Almost everyone agrees that it's been fulfilled. So when you have a lack of consensus, that's a good sign that it hasn't been fulfilled. The theme of wrath is another good reason. The whole theme of the section is God pouring out his wrath on the earth, something that hasn't happened. We're in the age of grace. We're not in the age of wrath. The age of wrath in the Old Testament is reserved for the day of the Lord. The fact that the whole thing is about wrath, and that's central to the whole thing, really suggests it hasn't started yet, because we haven't seen the wrath of God. And then coupled with that is the universal scope of these judgments. It's amazing as you read this. In fact, that's one of the most striking things about these judgments, is they're so universal. They talk about things like a third of the trees in the earth and a third of ships, and you know, a quarter of the men of the earth died, and you know, the whole earth was given this plague. This is a universal judgment. It's like the flood. This isn't local judgments. This isn't just Palestine, which the preterists would have us believe. This isn't just Rome or a certain region of the country. This is, or the world, this is the whole world. Everything in it is so universal. That argues very strongly for it being future. You have to somehow change that terminology, and they try to do that, if you're going to make this something that's already happened, or we're somehow in the middle. And then I mentioned before a lack of a starting point. You know, if Revelation 4:1 makes this future to John at that time, then when exactly in time did Jesus stand up and take the scroll? Well, he didn't. There is no starting point that you can really look to. All of those reasons, I would argue, are that these are future. So understand, when you read chapter 6, verse 1, you're talking about something that hasn't happened. And everything after it hasn't happened. So the third thing I would look at then, and this is where we maybe get a little more complicated, but I think this is the most important part, is the structure of the events. Now, when I say the structure of the events, I am referring to how do we understand these events as a whole. And the first thing that I point out is that this section is, as I've already said, it's the Lamb opens the seven seals. It is the Lamb returns. But then, and this is my main point here in this section, it is the 70th week of Daniel. This section is the 70th week of Daniel. Now again, this is one of the most fundamental building blocks for my understanding of the book of Revelation. As we go through it, chapter by chapter, and look at these things, you understand, I believe that fundamentally this is the 70th week of Daniel. Now, again, that's not arbitrary. And if you stay with me tonight, I think you'll see that it's not arbitrary. In fact, it makes incredible sense. When you put these things together, it fits beautifully. And it makes total sense. And it helps us tremendously when we go in and interpret the text to understand what's going on. Now, I gave these reasons last week briefly, and I'll just mention them again. Here are the reasons. Here are the parallels, if I could put it that way. The things that connect Revelation 6 through 19 with the Daniel 70th week. There are, I think I counted them, 9 or 10 are here. I'm going to go just mention them, and I give you references if you want to look at them. We're not going to look at them now. The first is the world kingdoms. You remember in Daniel 2 and 7, Daniel gives 4 world kingdoms leading up to the final Antichrist system. And those kingdoms are mentioned in Revelation 13. The 10 kings of Daniel 7:24, and also the 10 toes of the statue, all referring to, again, the political situation out of which the last ruler, the Antichrist, comes out of, the little horn. Those 10 kings, as seen just reigning just before Christ returns, are mentioned in Revelation 17:12 in relation to the beast, in relation to the Antichrist. They're the ones who give their rule to the Antichrist. The world ruler, known in Daniel as the little horn, in the book of Revelation, Revelation 13, as the beast. The descriptions are perfectly parallel. Okay? The length of the reign of this world ruler in Daniel is 3.5 years. In the book of Revelation is 3.5 years. His persecution, that is the Antichrist or the little horn's persecution of Israel. The temple in Jerusalem, we went through the 70th week of Daniel, it is implied that the temple would be rebuilt in the abomination of desolation. And so you have the temple in Jerusalem in Daniel 9:27. You have it in Revelation chapter 11. The abomination of desolation. Again, Daniel speaks several places about in the midpoint of this 7-year period, there is an abomination of desolation. The temple that's in Jerusalem is desecrated. That is, there is something set up in the temple that makes it abominable to the Jews. We find not only in Daniel, but in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, that that thing is the Antichrist setting himself up as God in the temple to be worshipped as God. That is the abomination of desolation spoken of in Daniel in several places. It's referred to in Revelation 11 and 13. And the timing of that abomination of desolation being in the midpoint, being at the 3.5-year mark, that's how it is in Daniel. That's how it is in Revelation chapter 11, as we'll see tonight. And finally, the end of the world ruler. In other words, the final end of the beast, which happens at the end of the 3.5-year period when the Messiah takes the kingdom. All of those things, I don't know if this is exhaustive. This didn't come from any particular commentary or anything. This is just listing things that come to my mind in relation to Daniel. I don't know if this is exhaustive, but these things are strong reasons to equate this section with Daniel's 70th week. So it's not arbitrary. And let me just briefly, and I don't want to take too much time on this, but it is helpful, let me go back and rehearse just briefly the 70 weeks prophecy. In Daniel 9:24, Daniel had this prophecy given to him. And it starts out, it says, 70 weeks are determined upon thy people, that's the Jews, and upon thy holy city, that's Jerusalem, to finish the transgression, to make an end of sins, to make reconciliation for iniquity, to bring in everlasting righteousness, and to seal up the vision and prophecy, and to anoint the most holy. I went through all this before, so I won't go through it again, only to say this, that it is a definite time period that the Lord tells Daniel is appointed to the Jews, to the Jewish nation, and to Jerusalem until the kingdom comes. Okay? I'm not going to go through the proof of it again, but the 70 weeks is 490 years, and we looked at prophetical years and all that. We're not going to go look at that again, but the prophecy divides into 69 weeks and 1 week. And the 69th, the starting point being, I believe, 444 BC, the ending point for the 69 weeks being the triumphal entry in AD 33. And what happened, and this is where a lot of the debate is in regard to this whole thing, there is 1 week left. And the big mystery is what happened to the last week. What happened to the last 7 years? Because there's nothing there. If you go to the 7 year, add 7 years to those 69 weeks, there's nothing there. But what you find in the text is that there are two things that happen between the 69 weeks and the last week of years. And the first thing is the Messiah is cut off, namely the crucifixion. That happens after the 69th week in the prophecy, but before the 70th week. Then there's another thing that happens. It's the Romans destroy Jerusalem, which also appears in the text, between the 69th week and the 70th week. But what we find is that still, even now, the events that are in that last week have not happened. So there is this undisclosed period of time that this hasn't happened. We don't know when it's going to start. But when it starts, that's Revelation chapter 6, verse 1. In other words, when he takes the first seal, that is the beginning of that seven-year period. And at the end of that seven-year period, the kingdom is established. The kingdom comes, Christ comes to the earth, according to the book of Daniel and according to the book of Revelation. So that you understand what I'm arguing fundamentally is that Revelation 6 through 19 is that last week of years that hasn't been fulfilled, that must be fulfilled in order to enter the kingdom. And it refers specifically to the Jews, not to the church. That's part of the reason I believe in a pre-tribulation rapture. It does not refer to the church. Now, this is what happens in that last week, according to Daniel. Daniel 9:27. Now, this is admittedly, in and of itself, is rather enigmatic. Then he shall confirm a covenant with many for 1 week. But in the middle of the week, he shall bring an end to sacrifice and offering, and on the wing of abomination shall be one who makes desolate, even until the consummation which is determined is poured out in the desolate. Let me, again, we went through this before, but just to refresh your memory, I believe that he, in the text, there in the beginning when it says, then he shall confirm, the he, I believe, is the prince that will come. In other words, in Daniel, it's the little horn. He, the little horn, the Antichrist, will confirm a covenant with the many. I believe, in the context, it's the Jews. In other words, this little horn, this world ruler, will make a covenant with Israel at the beginning of the 70th week. That's going to mark the beginning of the 70th week, a covenant. Now, he won't be known as the world ruler. He won't be ruling the whole world at that time. He will be a ruler, but he won't be the world ruler. He will be a ruler, and he will make a covenant. By the way, this is one of the reasons that a lot of dispensationalists have such an eye on the Middle East. You understand that when peace does come to the Middle East, that's actually a sign of the beginning of the end. That's why there's so much focus on what's going to happen. Because fundamentally what must happen is there must be a peace made in such a way that Israel is given the ability to build the temple. That will be radical. And they are talking about trying to build the temple. So these things are realistic, you understand. He will make a covenant that will allow the Jews to build a temple. And that first 3.5 years, they will build a temple in Jerusalem on the Temple Mount. But in the middle of the week, in other words, halfway through the seven-year period, 3.5 years, the midpoint, in the middle of the week, he, meaning the Antichrist, will bring an end to the sacrifice. In other words, they will build the temple, they will offer sacrifices, and in the middle of the week, the Antichrist breaks his covenant with them. And he ends sacrifice in the temple. And what he does, and we find this out, this is the mysterious part, and on the wing of abomination shall be one who makes desolate, even until the consummation which is determined is poured out in the desolate. Let me summarize how I understand it. When it says, and on the wing of abomination shall be one who makes desolate, someone will desolate the temple, the Antichrist. He will desolate it by setting himself up in the temple as God and demand to be worshipped. We know that more from the New Testament than the Old, although it is referred to other places in Daniel. That is the middle point. And from that point on, according to Daniel, the Antichrist rules the world. This man, this little horn, rules the world and persecutes the Jews tremendously. It's going to be worse than the days of Hitler. This will be the worst persecution of Israel in the history of the world. And I'm not getting that from Daniel 9:27. I'm getting that from other places. But understand, summarize, this is the 70th week begins with a covenant, ends with the kingdom established when Jesus destroys the Antichrist. It is divided into two periods of 3.5 years. There's a first half and a second half. In the first half, it's fundamentally characterized, I'm speaking purely politically, it is characterized by peace between the Antichrist and Israel. It is not defined throughout according to peace. There is world upheaval, as we'll find out, both in Daniel and in Revelation. But there is peace between Antichrist and Israel. The second half is characterized by this little horn ruling the world, the Antichrist ruling the world, and also persecuting Israel. And the middle point is the abomination of desolations. Now, let me talk about the structure of Revelation 6 through 19, and then I will tie the two together. Well, let me just stop. And I don't want to take too much time, but does anybody have any questions about what I just said about the 70th week of Daniel? That is, by the way, that's probably the central point in terms of discussion and debate, especially in relation to all millennialists and post-millennialists. Yes? Yes. Yes.
I'm just trying to think of this in terms of real life. You've got 3.5 year period here with the depot and the temple with the institution of the sacrificial system. You got an enormous amount of momentum over 3.5 years of doing this, especially given all of the pent up Jewish, synagogue.
Yes. Yes.
And I'm just thinking, the sheer power of being able to do that is just stratospheric. I mean, it's breathtaking.
Yes. Yes, it is. And you're
out of this world.
You mean from the standpoint of the Antichrist?
Yes.
Yes. Well, and again, this is why I said this last week. You understand that there's a massive effort now that has been going on for centuries, yea, millennia, to bring this about. This isn't going to happen overnight. There has been a massive effort to bring this about. There are people, a vast number of people in governments around the world, including our own, that are working to bring this about. They have been working to bring this about. It's not a secret anymore, by the way. It's very open. You can read about it in lots of places. You go to Barnes and Nobles, you can find books about it now. You didn't used to. There are people who have been working on this for a long, long time. It is not something that you do overnight. But I would emphasize, too, that you understand the Jews today are looking for a Messiah. This is part of the development. The Jews are looking for someone to deliver them. And they are truly being surrounded by enemies in Israel today. This is, again, part of the reason that I think we are in the last days, because Israel is at a point where they could realistically face annihilation overnight, and they know that. And they are looking, some of them, many of the Orthodox, are looking for the Messiah, openly. And they are looking, and I believe that there will be, at the beginning, there will be something catastrophic. In other words, they will be utterly threatened, and someone will save them. A political ruler, and they will see him as their Messiah, and that will mark the beginning. They will think he is the Messiah. He saved them. He will deliver them from annihilation, and there may be great destruction before that, but he will deliver them, and they will see him as the Messiah. But let me go back and now let me look at the text now in terms of how the structure, how the text itself is structured. It's centered around, the whole section from 6 through 19 is centered around three sets of judgments. I think you all know that. There are the seal judgments, which we just read. There are the trumpet judgments, and there are the bowl judgments. Now let me suggest to you, and I'll show this and I'll say more about this, but let me suggest to you that if you read the seal judgments, the trumpet judgments, and the bowl judgments in order, if you just read those things in order, you generally have the flow of the 7 years. In other words, they are, I believe, and I'm not going to be dogmatic about this, but I believe they are chronologically working through the 7 year period. In other words, if you read through the seal, trumpet, and bowl judgments, you would be reading through chronologically this period of time. But really, a better way to look at it would be something like this. This is how it's structured in the text. You have the seven seal judgments, but actually the seven trumpet judgments come out of the seven seal judgments, because the seventh seal is the seven trumpets. When the seventh seal is taken off, what is revealed are seven trumpets. And when the seven trumpets are done, the seventh trumpet is seven bowls. So that you have this telescopic effect. So that you could really, let me just point out that the seal judgments are in chapter 6, the trumpet judgments are in chapters 8 through 9, and the bowl judgments are 15 and 16. So let me, again, reiterate, if you read chapter 6 and then jumped over and read chapter 8 through 9 and then jumped over and read chapter 15 through 16, I believe you have a chronological sequence. That is the 7 year period. Now we can talk about what the judgments are and all that, and we'll do that in a little bit of detail, but understand that that is the sequence. That is the chronology. I think you could understand it this way. In other words, the whole period, you could say, is the seal judgments. Out of the seal judgments, in other words, the seal judgments include the trumpet judgments, which include the bowl judgments. And that's why I say the whole section is, could be summarized, Jesus, the Lamb, removing the seven seals. And that includes seven trumpets, which includes seven bowls. Does that make sense? So, that's very helpful, by the way, because you get it's very confusing. If you go through this and you're trying to work everything out, as you go through, it becomes very confusing because you have all these visions, and it goes from this vision to this vision to this vision. If you understand, if you read those chapters in order, you're getting, I believe, the chronological sequence, and everything else fits into this. But now, let me go a little step farther. You have the six seals, you have the six trumpets, and you have the seven bowls. The seals are in chapter 6. The trumpets are in chapters 8 and 9. The bowls are in chapter 15 and 16. By the way, I'm going to suggest that you go back this week and read through Revelation 6 through 19 with these notes before you. I think it will help you. But just a suggestion. But what you have is between them, you have these breaks. And these are, you have these visions. Chapter 7, you have two visions. Chapter 10 through 14, you have a series of, I don't know how you break them out, at least seven, maybe you could argue 10 visions that you have in chapters 10 through 14 between the trumpets and between the bowls. And then you have two more visions in chapter 17 and 18. And then, of course, you have in chapter 19 the return of Christ. So what you have are these visions interspersed into the judgments. Now, the first section of visions, let me just mention them. You have in chapter 7 two basic visions. You have one of the 144,000 sealed Jews, 12,000 from each tribe. And then you have, the other half of the chapter, you have this huge group of martyrs that are standing before the throne. And John says, who are these? And he says, these are they who have what? Come out of the Great Tribulation. I believe what you're basically seeing here, and we'll talk about this when we get to chapter 7, but I think what you're basically seeing here is a statement of the evangelism that takes place in the 70th week. It is done first and foremost by these Jews. And I believe these Jews are really part of the fulfillment of what Jesus said when he said, when you see the fig tree blossom, that's the Jews. In other words, they follow the Messiah. They believe on their Messiah. They believe on Christ. And they preach. They're witnesses. And God protects them. And the martyrs are from, it says, from every tribe, tongue, and nation. Now, I don't believe that that's the church, because I believe the church is God. I believe this is men and women saved from all the nations by the preaching primarily of the Jewish people. I'm not going to be dogmatic about that, but I would say this, that it is clearly a statement of the fact that during this time period, there are going to be millions of people saved by God's grace. It is going to be, I think, probably one of the greatest periods of receiving the gospel that we've ever seen in the history of the world. Will be doing this during this judgment. It's a measure of God's grace. Now, in the last part, you also have the two visions there are pretty straightforward. They're both about Babylon. Whoops. They're both about Babylon, the mother of harlots. Fascinating section. And we'll talk about them eventually. But Revelation 17 and 18 is basically talking about the world system that just fell. This is the world system that God just destroyed, that he's bringing an end to when he comes. It is the world system that goes all the way back to Babylon, the Tower of Babel. Yes?
Well, I have a question about if they're going to be raptured before this all happens.
Yes.
Where are they going to be at this time?
In heaven. Yeah. And I think that's John 14, 1 through 3. It's Revelation chapter 4, where the elders around the throne, I believe, is representative of the church, which we looked at. But yeah, they are in heaven. They are not on the earth. Well, there's more we could say about that. But let me just go on. So here you have this structure, and you have those visions on the front end and on the back end. What I want to talk about most are the visions in the middle. They're the most interesting. And they're the most important, I think, in understanding the structure. And here they are, and I'm not going to go into detail on them right now, but you have this you have this angel, this huge angel, that steps, he has one foot in the ocean, one foot on the land, and there are seven thunders, and John goes to write them down, and a voice tells him, don't write it down. And you're left wondering, what in the world is he talking about? Then he's told to go take the little book. There's a little book that this angel's holding, and John goes over and takes the book, and he eats it, and it's bitter in his belly. It reminds you of who? Ezekiel. It happened to Ezekiel. I think, I don't want to be, again, some of these things you have to, yeah, I don't want to be dogmatic, but I would suggest to you that it's meant to make you think of Ezekiel, that the things that Ezekiel spoke of are going to soon come to pass. But at any rate, then you have this, in chapter 11, verses 1 and 2, all of a sudden you have this mention of the temple. And John is told to go measure the temple. And then in chapter 11, verses 3 through 14, you have these two witnesses who witness in Jerusalem. And then you have in chapter 12 this woman who is persecuted by this red dragon, and we'll talk about that. And then in chapter 13 you have the beast and the whole Antichrist kingdom mentioned. And then you have in chapter 14, there's a lot in chapter 14. It's hard to summarize, but I would summarize it as the announcement of harvest. That's how it ends, and it's all related to announcements. These angels come and give announcements, one of them warning about the beast, one of them speaking in regard to the harvest coming. But at any rate, it ends with this statement of the harvest, that God is now going to harvest the earth, pointing back to the judgment statements in the Old Testament about the day of the Lord. Now, that's kind of a summary of those visions, but what is maybe helpful to understand is right in the middle of all those And I would argue logically, it's the logical middle of the whole section. You have the announcement of the seventh trumpet. But ironically, and I'll say more about this, ironically, nothing happens. It's just an announcement. The trumpet blows, and there's an announcement. And it talks about the wrath of God coming, and it talks about the kingdoms of the world become the kingdoms of the Lord. And then there's lightnings and thunders, and then it goes on to the next vision. But I suggest to you that it is announcing, the seventh trumpet is announcing the first bowl, or the bowl judgments, which are then announced in detail in chapter 15. But this is kind of logically the center of the whole section. It's this announcement of the seventh trumpet. Now, there's something about these visions that is especially interesting in chapter 10 through 14. And this is, I think, important. In almost every one of these visions, there is a time reference that is related to the 70th week of Daniel. In fact, all of the relationships in regard to time between the 70th week of Daniel and the book of Revelation are found in these visions in the middle. And it's interesting. Here are the time references. All of them refer to 3.5 years, which is what? That's half, right? That's half of the tribulation, half of the 70th week of Daniel. In 11:2, 42 months, the Gentiles will tread Jerusalem. Now, that's how long the Antichrist reigns in Jerusalem. And then in verse 3 of chapter 3, it says, 1,260 days there is the ministry of the two witnesses. That's exactly 3.5 years. Both of these are. Then in chapter 12, verse 14, in the vision of the woman and the dragon, it says the woman runs, is hidden by the Lord for 3.5 years. A time, a time and a half, which is the way of saying 3.5 years. That the woman is hid from the dragon. The woman, by the way, is Israel. We'll look at that when we get there. And then in chapter 13, in verse 5, it says the beast reigns for 42 months. All of these are 3.5 year periods. And they're all given in this central part between the trumpets and the bowls. And I would suggest that these visions from 10 through 14, I think you can relate all of them to the announcing and the description of the second half of the 70th week of Daniel. You can connect all of them to this. What is going on in the whole section is an announcement. And the announcement is, this is the second half. This is the time of great tribulation. This is the time when the beast reigns. All the announcements relate to it. So that you have, here in the middle, the announcement of the division. So I can put it this way. That the first half of the tribulation, or the first half of the Daniel 70th week is Revelation 6 through 9, and it includes the seals and the trumpets. And when the seventh trumpet is sounded, that's an announcement of the second half. It is the midpoint. And so that I would argue that Revelation 10 through 19 is the second half of Daniel's 70th week. By the way, if you read all the bowl judgments, I think all of them, if not all of them, most of them, have clear reference to the beast and the Antichrist. None of the other ones do. Now that makes sense if they're in the second half and the others are in the first half. None of the other ones, if you read the seals and the trumpets, none of them mention the Antichrist system. None of them mention the beast. But when you come to the bowls, most of them mention the beast and the Antichrist system. They are in the second half. So that you have, I think it helps you a great deal when you understand this is the structure. It's all chronological. I mean, it's all very logical. So, if what I'm saying is true, and I believe it is, what marks the beginning? A peace treaty. That's according to Daniel. And I would suggest to you that is what you have in Revelation chapter 6. Turn over to Revelation 6. Now again, I won't go into detail in this verse, but let me point something out in this section. Verse 2, he says, I looked and behold a white horse, and he who sat on it had a bow, and a crown was given to him, and he went out conquering and to conquer. Now, first of all, let me say it's not a literal horse. It's not a horse doesn't literally come down to the earth. It's a picture. It's a picture, it's a statement, it's a symbol of the fact that of this event. And when it says conquering and to conquer, what do you think of? War, right? So you're thinking war, right? It's interesting to note that in verse 3, when the second seal is broken, it says, when he broke the second seal, I heard the second living creature saying, come. And another, a red horse, went out, and to him who sat on it, it was granted to take peace from the earth. Now, when it says it was granted to take peace from the earth, what does that imply? That it had peace. And I suggest to you that the first seal is exactly what Daniel 9 talks about, namely, that it will begin with a covenant. There will be a man who will bring peace. He won't bring a world rule, but he will bring a certain amount of world peace. And that peace will fundamentally be in relation to the nation of Israel. I think that relates to Revelation chapter 6, verses 1 and 2. The ending point is obvious. The Messiah comes. That's in Revelation and Daniel. And the middle point, the abomination of desolations. You find it mentioned in Revelation chapter 11, verses 1 and 2. And you find it in chapter 13, verses 4 through 8. Both of those in relation to the middle point. It all fits beautifully. This is the structure, I believe, of the book, of the section from chapter 6 through verse 19. Does anybody have any questions? I know this is an awful lot. Like I said, it might be helpful to go back and read the text with this before you. But does anybody have any questions about what I said? That means you either all understand or you all don't understand. But I will refer back to this more in the future, because I think it helps us tremendously when you go through it to understand the big picture. Let me just, in closing, mention these three things briefly. When you come to this section, you have to understand, I think, at least three, and again, there's nothing inspired about this list, but three things that I think help you understand when you're looking at these events, the nature of these events. And the first thing you have to deal with is you have this combination of judgment, the wrath of God being poured out, and salvation. Now, the reason I point this out is because this is a theme throughout the Bible. And really, it comes to a climax in the 70th week of Daniel. This idea of judgment, on the one hand, that God judges his enemies and will bring vengeance upon his enemies, and on the other hand, he will bring salvation. We find in, again, Zechariah 14, when Jesus returns, when the Messiah comes, he rescues Israel. He brings vengeance on their enemies, and he rescues them. And this is the theme throughout the book, or throughout the section. You have, obviously, a lot of judgment, but you also have many statements of salvation, God delivering people out of this period. In the last moment, as it were, delivering them from the fire. And of course, they give their lives. I mean, there's mass martyrdom. To be saved in this period is pretty much to give your life. Although there will be many at the end who will be on the earth, there will be a vast number that will be persecuted and will be killed. So understand that as a basic theme as you go through. The second thing that is a very interesting dynamic, and I just mention it, the dynamic that you see throughout the section between heaven and earth. And I think it makes a statement. Do you remember what Peter said they'll say in the last days? Where's his coming? You know, things have always been the way they are, and you know, what's this talk about his coming? And they're scoffers, right? What you see in this section from Revelation 6 through 19, I think, is partially this concept of God saying, openly, profoundly, I am the Lord of this earth. And you see this interaction between heaven and earth, and all the wrath is coming from heaven on earth. And the people, it even says in several places in this section, the people knew that it was God, and they cursed Him. They refused to repent. And this will be open. During this time, there will be open war between heaven and earth. Today, and throughout the age of grace, it has been somewhat camouflaged. It has been somewhat, people can kind of masquerade. But in this day, in this time, there will be open warfare between heaven and earth, and men will openly hate God, and they will fight against God. And you see this dynamic throughout, between heaven and earth, this really war that ends at Armageddon. But understand, that's what's going on. And then you have, and this is, of course, a source of a lot of debate, the symbolism and literalism that's going on. How do you take symbolism versus literalism? How do you know when to take something as symbolic? And how do you interpret those symbols? There's a sense in which you have to take them one by one, but I would argue this, and we'll go through this. The symbols generally are, in other words, when we see a symbol, I think it's pretty obvious. For example, the horse that we just read about coming down and bringing, because oftentimes those symbols are defined for us in the text. Or if not in the Revelation, they're defined for us in the Old Testament. But I will say this, that I would generally, and I will generally, take things literally where it's possible to do so. And I'll just give you an example. I do believe Jesus literally returns on a white horse. Okay? The reason I say that is because Jesus said, when He left, what did He say? As you see me leaving, so I will come. He's going to physically, bodily descend. And I rather suspect it's going to be on a white horse. There are a couple judgments there in the trumpet judgments where you have these creatures coming out of the bottomless pit, and they're described as locusts with, you know, there's one that's heads of a lion, teeth like a lion, hair like women, bodies like horses. You know, these really strange descriptions, and some people will say, well, this is John wrestling with that and saying, you know, it really is some kind of a tank, and he's trying to describe it. And I say, no, I think that is truly a demonic creature. It says it's from the pit. And I take that literally. I believe there will be demonic, we'll talk more about that, but I think there will be true demonic activity on the earth. And you know what I think it will be? It has to do with the heaven and earth relationship. All of these people wanting to worship Satan, God will give them Satan. This is what Satan's about. They thought that Satan was for them, and they're going to find that really he brings terror. But they, of course, will blame God. But all that to say that is one of the great wrestlings that you have as you go through this text. How to take symbols, when to take it literally. I think you take them one at a time. And our interpretation on a lot of these things in regard to the detail obviously is going to be tentative. We don't know because it hasn't happened yet. But we can say some things, I think, that maybe help us. Any questions before we close? If not, Ron, could I ask you just to close us in a word of prayer?